Under oath? In a way? No, actually. Look, do yourself a favor and listen to me this time. Do you want to have another meltdown like last year in English when you were supposed to give that speech about Daisy Buchanan, but instead you just stood there staring at your note cards and saying, over and over again like you were having a brain aneurysm? What do you expect me to do? Just keep lying? I didn't say lie. All you have to do is just nod and confirm. Whatever they say about Connor, you just nod. Don't contradict and don't make shit up. It's foolproof. Literally nothing I tell my parents is true, and they have no idea. I absorb Jared's instructions. I'm trying to accept what he says I have to do while also thinking of ways to not have to do it. At the moment, the only house I want to be in is my own. It's nearly dark by the time I get there. The driveway is empty and the lights are off. I ignore the envelopes and flyers spilling from the mailbox. None of it is for me. The front door whines as I push it open. I'm inside now, finally, but I'm missing that sense of relief I was hoping to find. There's a note on my door. Sit tight. Take hold. Thunder Road. When it's not a horoscope, my mom is often quoting a Bruce Springsteen lyric. It's like she has no idea how to talk to me. I crumple the note and stare at my wrongly dressed reflection in the mirror. Even if I had known that a suit was the thing to wear, I don't own one. The last time I wore a suit was at my dad's wedding, and that was a rental. My mom and I flew out to Colorado. She didn't want to go to the wedding, but I did. I don't know if she went just for me or if she also wanted to prove to my dad that she had moved on. She certainly didn't prove it to me. When we got back to the hotel after the reception, she took the heel of her shoe and started hammering it into our picture frame wedding favor until the carpet was covered with tiny pieces of glass. At the time, I thought she just hated picture frames. I was only 10. Right now, it's almost 6 o'clock in Colorado. My dad has probably just arrived home from his accounting job. He hangs up his coat on the rack. Teresa already has dinner on the table, lasagna or a juicy prime rib. Everyone sits, and Teresa's older daughter, Haley, leads the family in a prayer, even though my dad was at one time an atheist. Haley's little sister, Dixie, sits there all cute with her milk mustache. Dad gives his second wife a wink and his second kids a hearty smile, and as they dig into the home-cooked meal Teresa slaved over all afternoon, each member of the family takes a turn talking about his or her day. "Hey, Dad," I say to the empty hallway as I head to my room, "want to hear about my day?" Interrupting this quality chat with Dad is the familiar whine of the front door. It sends a horror film shiver down my spine. By the time I hear my mom's voice, I'm already kicking off my dress shoes and stuffing them into my closet. One of the buttons on my shirt refuses to open before finally doing me a solid and coming undone. I slide under my covers, still in my khakis, just as my mom appears in my doorway. "Hi, honey." "You're home early," I say. "Not really. It's 8 o'clock." "Oh, wow. I didn't notice. I was so busy." "Oh, yeah? Doing what?" I'm not exactly sure what I'm trying to hide. I haven't had time to figure that out. It just seems like the most prudent thing to do is to say as little as possible. "Just thinking," I answer. Her expression changes. "About what happened?" She enters my room and perches awkwardly on the edge of my bed. "What do you mean?" I glance over at my crumpled shirt on the floor. It's only a matter of time before she starts poking around my room and inquires why I unearthed that never-worn piece from my closet. "I got an email from your school," she says, "about the boy who killed himself, Connor Murphy." There's something about hearing my mother say it out loud.
"Right, yeah."
"Did you know him?"
"No,"
I say quickly, clearly, definitively. If only I could have shown such decisiveness with Connor's parents.
"Well, if you ever want to talk about anything, I'm here. And if I'm not here, I'm a phone call away, or text, email, whatever."
I was just thinking about how far away Colorado seemed. And here's my mom, living with me in the same house, and I honestly can't say she feels any closer. She bows her head and starts fiddling with the drawstring of her pants. I can see the deep brown roots at the top of her head.
They seemed to be spreading and negating her most recent trip to the hairdresser. I'm not sure when she last visited the salon, but she's constantly saying how her next appointment is long overdue. "You're cast," she says. I try to shove it under my blanket, but I'm too slow. She grabs my arm. This damn cast should be on my foot. It's become my Achilles heel. "It says Connor." She sharpens her eyes. "You said you didn't know him."
"Yeah, I don't. I didn't. This is a different Connor."
As someone who's always been bad at lying, I can honestly say it never gets easier.
"He's new this year. So, yeah, I let him sign my cast.
Putting myself out there, you know?" She breathes out and places a palm over her heart. For a second there I was worried.
I still am.
"Hey, you know what?" she says. "Why don't we go to Bell House tomorrow?"
Breakfast at Bell House used to be our Saturday morning ritual, but with my mom's busy schedule, we haven't been back in a while. When we do make plans, something usually comes up. As much as I love the pancakes at Bell House, I feel like the smart thing to do right now is stay home and recharge.
"I think I have a lot of homework," I say.
"Come on," she says. "You've been back at school for a week already, and I've barely seen you."
One suicide, and all of a sudden my mom is paying attention.
Seriously, though, considering what she sees at work, stabbings, burns, overdoses, gunshot wounds, induced comas, not to mention untold numbers of soiled bedpans, I'd assumed she was numb to tragedies by now. But this one obviously hits close to home, even closer than she knows. I guess having a little company on a wide-open Saturday wouldn't be the worst thing. I do love those pancakes.
"Okay. Yeah. That would be good."
"It's a date, then," she says, tapping a spirited drum fill on my leg. "I can't wait." I think I'll save my enthusiasm for when we're in the car and I actually believe we're going. She stands up and grabs my Ativan off the nightstand. "You okay on refills?" She says this so often now, it's almost become a stand-in for goodbye.
"Yep," I say, which is my standard reply. Although the way today went, I might need a refill sooner than usual.
"Good.
Well, don't stay up too late."
"I won't," I say, eager to end this conversation. She pauses in my doorway.
"I love you."
I look at her.
"You too."
An unsteady smile, and she finally shuts the door. I jump out of bed and put my dress shirt back on its hanger and into my closet. While I'm up, I pause, overcome with a feeling. I step to the window, raise the blinds, and look out. The street appears empty. The neighborhood is completely still. There's no one out there. Of course not. The Bell House hostess tells us to sit wherever we'd like. My mom looks to me to pick a table, but wherever we'd like is way too open-ended for a mind like mine, and I become paralyzed. So, with a barely perceptible shake of her head, my mom leads the way. Breakfast is not the main meal on my mind this morning. From the moment I woke up, I've been obsessing about this dinner with the Murphys. Jared says I have no choice but to go, and I really wish I could think of a reason for why he's wrong about that. "You're so far away," my mom says when we're seated. "I feel like I want to come sit on your side."
"Don't," I beg. I already feel like we're on a date, with my mom wearing tight jeans and a low-cut shirt instead of her standard and appealingly baggy scrubs.
If she sits next to me in this small booth, I may have to begin emancipation procedures. I can't recall the last time my mom went on an actual date with a man. There was a leather jacket guy named Andreas many moons ago, but I'm not sure what happened to him. I like to think he died while attempting a motorcycle stunt. The server comes and I give her my order without even opening the menu. Pancakes, hash browns, OJ. I'm my most efficient when I don't have to think and I'm barely aware of what's happening. My mom gets an omelet. Once our menus are cleared, my mom reaches into her purse and pulls out a folder.
"Hey, remember that short story contest you won a few years ago?"
"I didn't actually win. I came in third place." Why is she bringing this up now? Has she officially run out of things to talk about with me?
"Third place in the whole country."
"Actually, just the state and only in my age bracket."
"Well, it was very impressive."
She places the folder on the table and flings it open.
"I found these online." college scholarship essay contests. Have you heard of these? NPR did a whole thing about it the other morning. There are a million different ones you can do. I spent my whole lunch break looking these up. She hands me a piece of paper and starts reading from the others. The John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Essay Contest, $10,000, College of Your Choice. Henry David Thoreau Scholarship, $5,000. She hands me the entire stack. With the way you write, you could really clean up here. Now I know why she defied expectations and followed through with our breakfast plans. It wasn't simply to spend time with me, but also to give me another assignment. "Wow," is the only response I can manage. She grabs the folder and places it back in her purse. I think I've hurt her feelings. That tends to happen. "Yeah, I just thought it was a neat idea," she says. "You've always been a wonderful writer. And we're going to need all the help we can get for college. Unless your stepmother has a trust fund for you I don't know about with all those fabulous tips she made cocktail waitressing." She will never get over the fact that Teresa went from being a cocktail waitress to a woman whose only job now is to be a mother. And she did it by stealing my mom's husband. Sometimes I feel like my mom works so hard just so she can hold up an invisible cross-country middle finger to her younger replacement. I get the resentment, especially with how much she has to work and for so little. She's like an indentured servant, always rushing off to the hospital whenever she's called, never able to say no. If she did, they'd find someone else. And it's not like she has anything to fall back on. The degree she's been working towards at night seems a long way from bearing any fruit. A heap of pancakes appears before me. It's the add-ons that make Bell House's pancakes memorable. The house syrup, the strawberry butter, the powdered sugar. The pancakes themselves are pretty standard. "College is going to be so great for you, honey. How many times in life do you get to just start all over again?" That does sound tempting, actually. Can I start over today? The only people who like high school are cheerleaders and football players, and those people all end up miserable anyway. "Weren't you a cheerleader?" I point out. "For like a week. That doesn't count." Over the years, my mom's stint as a cheerleader has gotten shorter and shorter. She used to claim she cheered a whole season, and now she cheered only a week. All I know is she was around long enough to be photographed with the rest of the team. I guess I could ask my dad for the truth. My parents dated back in high school. But when he and I finally get a chance to talk, the last person either of us wants to talk about is my mother. She takes my hands before I can dig into my food. "What I'm trying to say is that you've got so many wonderful things ahead of you. Just remember that. It's a long way to the top, but the journey is totally worth it." I nod and reclaim my hands for eating. My mom, however, is frozen, staring through her food. It lasts longer than I'm comfortable with. "Mom," she snaps awake, surprised. "Sorry." She unfolds a paper napkin and lays it on her lap. "I was just thinking."
"About?"
"About that boy who..." The pancakes in my mouth suddenly lose their appeal. "I keep wondering how he did it. Razor blade? Pills? Noose? Carbon monoxide? The casket was closed at the wake, so maybe he used a gun? I know he didn't jump off a bridge, considering the pristine condition of my letter. I can't find any details about his death. People online keep saying it was probably an overdose, which would be fitting, and peaceful. But maybe not. I wonder if at any point he regretted it. If there was a moment between deciding and dying when he changed his mind." She lifts her fork. "Those poor parents. I just can't imagine." "I can. I witnessed it. The sadness in them, in his parents, was beyond what I've ever known or imagined. Something total and unending. His mom was just destroyed, flattened. And right now, the two of them are probably sitting there, alone and confused, asking themselves the same sorts of questions I'm asking. The really messed up part is that some of these questions will never have answers. Knowing that must be the worst. But then there's my letter, giving them the wrong answers, but still answers. Still something. If I ever lost you," my mom says, taking her first bite, I just don't know what I'd do. She smiles helplessly. For my mom, it's only hypothetical. But for Connors? One dinner. 2 hours max. Jared's message repeats in my mind. Just nod and confirm. Chapter 8. The bus ride to the Murphy's house takes 40 minutes. In a car, it would take half that, but I don't drive. At first, I couldn't wait to get my license. I longed for the ability to just get up and go whenever I wanted. But any romantic vision I had of the road was quickly spoiled. In Driver's Ed, they show you nightmarish videos of car crashes and alarming statistics about mortality rates, and then they hand you a learner's permit and throw you behind the wheel. Sure, you've got an expert coaching you from the passenger seat, but you're the one in charge, struggling to remember all the rules you learned. And then, just as you're getting the hang of it, you realize that even if you drive flawlessly, you have to trust that everyone else on the road will do the same. But they don't. It's chaos out there. No one seems to use a blinker, or come to a complete stop, or yield to pedestrians. The light is still turning green, and the person in the car behind you blares their horn. Then there are animals running into the road, cops waiting around bends, and drivers staring at their phones. It's a miracle that anyone gets where they're going without harming themselves or others, because so many of the worst things that could happen, paralysis, disfigurement, brain damage, accidental manslaughter, drowning, decapitation, pulverization, incineration, bleeding out while waiting for help, can happen in a car. On the day of my driver's test, I locked myself in the bathroom. Through the door, I heard my mom talking not so quietly on the phone. What kind of kid isn't excited to get their license? At one point, she tried to hand me the phone. Your father wants to speak to you. I hated her for calling him. When I finally opened the door, my mom was in tears. We can't keep doing this, she said. You don't have to feel this way. Don't you want to feel better? I must have said yes, because a week later I had my first appointment with Dr. Sherman. A few months after that, with the help of my pal Lexapro, I was able to get my license. I never actually use it, though. Lucky for me, we can't afford a second car. The Murphys live in a newer part of town, where the houses are bigger, and the lawns are wider, and the driveways are longer. As the bus passes the front entrance of Ellison Park, I see the well-lit welcome sign that I spent so much of my summer refurbishing. I always knew Zoe lived over here by the park, but I wasn't sure exactly where. I must have passed by her street every day on my way to work and never knew it. It's a short walk from the bus stop, but still, by the time I arrive, my armpits are drenched and the paper wrapped around my flower bouquet has become a soppy mush in my hands. On the porch, I tear the paper off the flowers, roll it into a ball, and shove it into the pocket of my pants. The Murphy house sits peacefully between two majestic beech trees at the end of a wide cul-de-sac. The front door is painted a storybook red. It's time to ring the bell. But for some reason, I can't lift my arm. These flowers should be for Zoe, as a gesture of, well, my affection or whatever. But instead, I'm giving them to her mother, because she lost her son. The only reason I'm here is because Connor isn't. How am I supposed to feel about that? I'm so busy not ringing the doorbell that I barely notice the front door swing open to reveal Connor's mom, a confused smile on her face. What are you doing out there? She says. Good night. I mean, good evening, Mrs. Murphy. Come on in, and please call me Cynthia. I present the flowers. Oh, that is very sweet, Evan. Thank you. She pulls me in for a hug, holding on a little too long. I worry that she can feel my heart slamming out of my chest. And then, over her shoulder, I see Zoe coming down the stairs. Unlike her mother, she does not look happy to see me. Her eyes seem to know who I am. A big non-truth teller. And also a fool to have ever agreed to come here tonight. In the center of the table is a bowl of apples. They're so shiny and perfect I assume they're fake. But now, after staring at them for the past 10 minutes, I'm convinced they're edible. So is the food on my plate, but I'm finding it hard to breathe, let alone swallow. I've been trying to trap single pieces of rice between the tines of my fork, just a little game to pass the time. It's hot in here, Mrs. Murphy says, fanning herself. Is anyone else feeling hot? I'm melting, but I keep my mouth shut. It's muggy for September, Mr. Murphy says. I can lower the AC if you want. No, it's fine. She dabs her head with her napkin. Zoe hasn't spoken since I got here. Last week we finally talked, after so many years. Twice. And now it's looking like the first two times may also be the last. I thought she'd be back at school today, it being Monday, but she was absent again. I wonder if she's ever coming back. Mr. Murphy lifts a platter. Would anyone else like more chicken? I think you're the only one with an appetite, Larry, Mrs. Murphy says. He hesitates for a moment, then forks a piece of chicken onto his plate. Well, I'm not going to let it go to waste. It was very considerate of the Harrises to bring it over. I cut off a bite of chicken, but I don't actually bring it up to my mouth. Did Connor tell you about the Harrises? Mrs. Murphy asks me. Part of my apprentice training at the park was learning the Ranger Code of Ethics. There's a part in the handbook about being honest in thought and deed. Unfortunately, the park ranger handbook makes no mention of how to survive the jungle of high school or how to not make a bad situation worse. For help with that, I've looked instead to Jared for advice. As terrible as that decision might prove to be, if I had just listened to him in the first place, I never would have gone to Connor's wake, and I never would have been invited to tonight's dinner. In response to her question, I simply nod and take a sip of water. I'm going with Jared on this. It's not the same as lying. I'm not actually speaking words. They're very old friends of ours, she says. I can tell she's waiting for me to say something. I'm not supposed to. That's the plan. But now that I'm actually face to face with this woman and her needy eyes, making it through the whole night without words seems unrealistic. Not to mention rude. I say, which isn't technically a word. Even if it is, it's barely a word. And besides, it could be referring to the food that I'm pretending to eat. Our families used to ski together, Mrs. Murphy says. We had some really nice times out there on the slopes. I nod and nod and nod, and then, before I can stop myself, I open my mouth. Connor loved skiing. Connor hated skiing, Zoe says. I can feel Zoe's eyes on me, but I don't dare look over. Why did I think I could handle this? If I sense even a hint of pressure, I immediately buckle. Pressure is my kryptonite. Connor hates skiing like I hate pressure. Right. He hated it. That's what I meant. It was, yeah, just pure hate whenever skiing was the topic. He loved talking about how much he hated skiing. So you guys hung out a lot? You and Connor? Mrs. Murphy asks. It's a mistake to tear my eyes away from the bowl of apples, but I do it anyway. Mrs. Murphy's face is begging for even the tiniest bit of information. Something. Anything. What I come up with finally is pretty much. And I'm actually proud of this answer, because it's not yes, and also because a lot means something different to different people. Do I speak to my father a lot? Compared with how often soldiers in Afghanistan talk to their dads, yeah, probably. I think that's fair to say. But Zoe wants clarification. Where? You mean, where did we hang out? Yes, where? Jared never specified what to do about questions that required more than a simple yes or no. It turns out this is not true-false. This is an essay exam. Well, I say, forcing a quick cough. We do most of our hanging out at my house. I mean, sometimes we'd go to his house. I mean, here. If nobody else was here. She's about to call me a liar and a phony. I know it. I'll be thrown out of this house, and then I won't just be invisible. I'll be a pariah, too. I'll be homeschooled, and my only connection to the outside world will be social media and email. Oh, email, I say. We would email a lot, mostly. Sometimes he didn't want to hang out in person, which I understood. We had that in common, I guess. We looked through his emails, Zoe says. There aren't any from you. Maybe I'm just excited that she's talking to me again. Maybe that's why, against my better judgment, I keep stringing more and more words together. Well, yeah. I mean, that's because he had a different account. A secret account. I should have said that before. That was probably very confusing. Sorry. Why was it secret? Zoe asks. Why was it secret? I repeat. Now seems like a good time to start eating. I shovel some rice into my mouth and gesture to the others that I'll be ready to answer Zoe's perfectly reasonable question after I've swallowed all my food, just because it's poor etiquette to talk with food in your mouth, as everyone knows, obviously. I swallow and wash it all down with some water. It was secret because it was just... He thought it would be more private that way. Mrs. Murphy shakes her head. I told you, Larry. He knew you read his emails.
And I don't regret it, Mr. Murphy says, reaching for his wine. Somebody had to be the bad guy.
They stare at each other, continuing their conversation with silent, powerful words. I look away, allowing them privacy. It's just weird, Zoe says. The only time I ever saw you and my brother together was when he shoved you at school last week. Shit, she remembers. Of course she remembers. Mrs. Murphy leans over. Connor shoved you? I wouldn't say it like that, Mrs. Murphy. In that way, I tripped is what really happened. Please, Evan, call me Cynthia. Oh, right. I'm sorry.
Relief at the change of subject.
Cynthia. I smile at her.
I was there, Zoe says. I saw the whole thing. He pushed you. Hard.
A drop of sweat falls from my armpit all the way down my torso to the waistband of my jeans. No mere subject change will get me out of this.
Oh, I remember now, I say, about what happened. That was a misunderstanding, because the thing was, he didn't want us to talk at school, and that's exactly what I did. I tried to talk to him at school. It wasn't really a big deal, seriously. It was my fault.
Why didn't he want you to talk to him at school? Zoe says. It never ends. The more I answer, the more they ask. I have to stop this. But how?
He didn't really want anyone to know we were friends, I tell them. He was embarrassed, I guess.
Why would he be embarrassed? Mrs. Murphy, I mean, Cynthia, says. I wipe my forehead with my napkin. Not sophisticated, but so necessary.
I guess because he thought I was sort of...
a nerd, Zoe says.
Zoe! Her father shoots her a look, but Zoe ignores him, not about to let up on me.
Isn't that what you meant? She says.
Loser, I was gonna say, actually, but nerd works too.
Cynthia places her hand on my arm.
That wasn't very nice.
Well, Zoe says, Connor wasn't very nice, so that makes sense.
Cynthia sighs.
Connor was a complicated person.
No, Connor was a bad person. There's a difference.
Zoe, please, Mr. Murphy says.
Dad, don't pretend like you don't agree with me.
It's too hot in here, Cynthia says, which is exactly what I was thinking.
I'll lower the AC, Mr. Murphy repeats, but he doesn't leave the table. I can now appreciate at least one plus side of having divorced parents and never actually sitting down to eat dinner with my mom at home. Not having to endure this.
Cynthia wipes her brow.
You refuse to remember any of the good things. Both of you. You refuse to see anything positive.
Because there were no good things, Zoe says.
What were the good things?
I don't want to have this conversation in front of our guest, Cynthia says. I drink more water and I keep pretending to drink long after my glass is empty.
What were the good things, Mom?
There were good things, Cynthia insists.
Okay, then say what they were. Tell me.
There were good things.
Yes, you keep saying that. What were they?
Cynthia doesn't answer. Mr. Murphy looks down at his plate. The question hangs in the room, a thick, hot smog that no one can get out from under. I watch them all, struggling to breathe, struggling to be, struggling.
I remember a lot of good things about Connor.
All eyes turn. That was me who just spoke. I said that. Why did I just say that? How did those words come out of my mouth?
Like what? Zoe wants to know.
Never mind, I say, I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
Again, you're sorry, Zoe says, dismissing my entire existence.
Go ahead, Evan. You were saying something, Cynthia says.
It doesn't matter, really.
We want to hear what you have to say. Please, Evan.
I don't know how to do it. How to let this woman down after all she's been through. Her heart is in my hands. That's what it feels like. Even her husband is standing by, all alert, his fork down, just waiting. I glance at the last person at the table, Zoe. Her expression is softer now, as if her curiosity has briefly overpowered her doubt. They need something, this family. They need me to say something that will make them feel better. Well, I begin. Connor and I had a really great time together this one day, recently. That's something good that I remember about Connor. That's what I keep thinking about. That day. That one day. I already know that what I just said won't be enough. They'll want more. I keep painting myself into a corner. They want specifics, details. They need them. I'm scrambling for the next tidbit, the whole time staring at that bowl in the middle of the table. Apples, I say before thinking it through. We went to the apples place. I look up. Anyway, I knew it was stupid. I don't know why I even brought it up. I need to leave. Right now. I squeeze my fists in my lap, my nails digging into my palms. How can I get away from here without being rude? He took you to the orchard? Cynthia says. I scan her expression. It looks like I've touched on something. There's a new brightness in everyone's eyes. Their faces encourage me. I can't leave now. Yes, he did. When? Cynthia asks. Once. It was just that once. I thought that place closed, Mr. Murphy says. Years ago. Exactly, which is why we were so bummed when we got there, because it was totally closed down, and Connor said the apples there were the best. Cynthia is smiling, but also tearing up. We used to go to the orchard all the time. We'd do picnics out there. Remember that, Zoe? Yeah, Zoe says, her expression somewhere between wistful surprise and forced indifference. Cynthia looks to her husband across the table. You and Connor had that little toy plane you would fly. Until you flew it into the creek. Mr. Murphy almost smiles. That was an emergency landing. Oh, Evan, I can't believe Connor took you there, Cynthia says. I bet that was fun. I bet you two had some real fun. We did. The whole day was just amazing. That was back in the spring, I think. Larry, what was the name of that ice cream place out there we loved? Cynthia asks. A la mode, he answers. That was it, she says with genuine appreciation. A la mode. That's where we went, actually, I say, my enthusiasm getting the better of me. We got ice cream at that a la mode place. They had that homemade hot fudge, Mr. Murphy recalls. We would sit in the meadow with all the sycamores, Cynthia says, smiling at Zoe. And you and your brother would look for four-leaf clovers. I'd completely forgotten about that place, Mr. Murphy says. Well, I guess Connor didn't, Cynthia says. Isn't that right, Evan? I look at her, and then Mr. Murphy, and then Zoe, and I release all the air from my chest, and I tell them exactly what they're aching to hear. That's right. The air releases from their chests, too. It feels that way. There's relief, real relief, small but tangible in the room. What I'm doing, what I'm saying is working. It's helping. And that's all I want. To help. We would do that sort of thing all the time, actually, I say, not knowing how to stop myself now. Just go somewhere and talk. Like buddies. Like friends. We'd talk about movies and people at school. We talk about girls, you know, just normal stuff. Connor was easy to talk to. I see how much my words mean to them. It feels good to make them feel good. It's the right thing for me to be doing, to be making their hurt go away even for a moment. That one day, I say, at the orchard, I remember we found this field and collapsed on the grass and we looked up at the sky and we just talked about our lives, where we were, where we were going, what would happen after school. We didn't know exactly. We just knew we'd figure it out. We'd have each other's backs. Whatever it was, anything seemed possible. I pause, thinking I've lost them, that I've lost myself. But it's too late now. My mouth forges on without my mind, the words arriving as if they've been waiting a lifetime to be spoken. And the sun that day, I can picture it. It was so bright. And we were lying there, looking up at the sky. It looked endless, like it went on forever. And the tree. We saw this tree, this incredibly tall oak tree, bigger than all the others. We got up and we ran over to it and we started climbing it. We didn't even think. The Murphys climb with me, hanging on my every word. We kept climbing, higher and higher, climbing and climbing almost at the top, but then the branch gave way. I fell. I'm on the ground. My arm is numb. I'm waiting. Any second now. Any second now. And I look, and I see Connor. He's come to get me. I stop talking, finally. They're all looking at me as if waiting for me to say more, but I can hardly comprehend what I've already spoken. It's like I'm waking from a dream. I was sitting here describing that day, that nightmare day, except it wasn't that day. Not exactly. This time, Connor was there. I mean, he wasn't really there, but in my mind, it was like he was, and all of a sudden, that same day wasn't such a nightmare. It was something else. In my periphery, I see Cynthia reaching over, and then I feel her arms wrapping around me. "Thank you, Evan," she says. "Thank you." It's the best feeling. And the worst. Zoe follows me out of the house. "I'll take you home," she says. I never thought there'd be an instance where I would deny Zoe Murphy, but all I want right now is to be alone. "You don't have to. I need to go for a drive. Hop in." She loops around the horseshoe driveway and zips out into the street. I thought I'd finally be able to breathe out for the first time in hours, but no. I'm now sitting shotgun in Zoe Murphy's blue Volvo. I have literally dreamed about this moment, having a chance to be alone with her like this, just a few inches away. But right now, I'm in no condition to be on. Someone, please, turn me off. The silence is begging me to kill it. "This is a nice car. What is it? German?" "It's a piece of crap," Zoe says. "There's always something wrong with it." The engine growls as Zoe picks up speed. She doesn't say another word to me the whole ride home, even when I'm telling her which streets to take to my house. The quiet ride gives me the opportunity to review the night and arrive at the assessment that it was a complete and unequivocal failure. At one point, when the speedometer is up past 60, I imagine unbuckling my belt, pulling the door handle and tumbling out onto the busy road. What a tragedy. Once we're parked outside my unlit house, Zoe finally turns and acknowledges me. "You probably think I'm just a junior and I'm clueless, but I know what's really going on." A frightening sharpness to her expression. "I don't know what you mean." "You and Connor weren't sending secret emails because you were friends." "I should have done it. Jumped out of the car when I had the chance." "What?" "I've been racking my brain all night trying to figure out why you two would possibly be talking to each other," Zoe says. "Let me guess. Was it about drugs?" "Drugs? That's what he was mad about the other day at lunch, isn't it? When he pushed you? Be honest with me, please. I just want to know the truth." "No, are you crazy? Me? I would never. That's not something I'm involved in, I swear." Finally, a truthful truth. "Oh yeah? You swear?" Zoe's mother keeps showering me with hugs, but Zoe only douses me with suspicion. "I swear." She studies me for a moment, and then turns away, making it clear I'm dismissed. I try to open the door, but it's locked. She hits a button, but at the same time I'm pulling the handle. I release the handle so she can now unlock the door without my stupid hand getting in the way. When I finally hear that heavenly click, I throw open my door and inhale a whole chestful of fresh air.
I shut the door gently behind me and watch her accelerate into the night. How wrong I've been about everything from the very start. The worst that could happen. It's still happening. Chapter 9. I'm not sure why I keep reporting back to Jared after every new disaster. I never feel better after our chats. Jared has a way of highlighting my errors so they seem even worse than I first realized. But I'm so lost right now, sitting alone on the couch in my dark living room. Jared is the only person in the entire world who has even the slightest appreciation for where I am. I'm floating through space and he's the voice in my earpiece from Central Command. I might not agree with his tactics, but without him, there's a good chance I may never get back home. I bring Jared up to speed with what happened at the Murphys. As usual, I somehow fail to anticipate where he'll focus his critique. His parents think you were lovers. You realize that, right? What? Why would they think that? You were best friends, but he wouldn't let you talk to him at school, and when you did, he kicked your ass? That's like the exact formula for secret gay high school lovers. Oh my god. I told you what to do. What did I say? Nod and confirm. That's all. I tried. You don't understand. It's different when they're looking you in the eye. I got nervous. I just started talking, and once I started, you couldn't stop. They didn't want me to stop. It's true. I don't think I realized it until just now, but it's like they were helping me along, filling in the gaps when I didn't know where the story should go next. I'm not blaming them, obviously. I know this is all on me, but I also know, from the looks on their faces, that they wanted me to keep going. They needed me to. The thing is, I tried to tell them the truth. I mean, I did tell them the truth. I told Connor's parents that he wasn't the one who wrote the letter. I told them point blank. But they wouldn't listen.
So what else did you completely fuck up?
Well, I'm pretty sure Zoe hates me. She thinks Connor and I were doing drugs together.
You're the best. I really mean that. What else?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I mean, I told them we wrote emails.
Emails?
Yeah, I told them that Connor and I emailed, and that he had a secret email account.
Oh, right, one of those secret email accounts. Sure, for sending pictures of your penises to each other.
It's all just a big joke to him. I really don't know why I keep turning to Jared for advice.
No, I just said he had this secret account and we would send emails to each other. I mean, honestly, could you be any worse at this?
Is that so bad?
They're gonna wanna see your emails.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
Oh shit. Of course they're gonna wanna see our emails. What's wrong with me? Seriously, why do I keep fooling myself into thinking that the worst that could happen has already happened? Things always get worse. It's guaranteed. That's how life works. You're born, and you keep getting older, and grayer, and sicker, and no matter what efforts you make to reverse the process, you die. Every single time. To repeat, worse, 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 and then death. I have a long way to go before the worst. This is only the beginning. I'm so screwed. What the hell am I gonna do?
I can do emails.
What do you mean?
I can make the emails.
You can? How?
It's easy. You make up an account and backdate the emails. There's a reason I was the only CIT with keycard access to the computer cluster this summer. I have skills, son.
I'd be giving them what they want. What they need. I'd be helping them. It's tempting. It really is. But it's also sick. I can't keep doing this, deceiving these poor people. I'm not cut out for it. At one point tonight, it felt like I was sweating from my eyes. That's how anxious I was. Had I perspired another drop, I might have mummified. I can't go on like this. I'm all drained out. I turn my phone over so it's face down. The light from the screen waves over my cast. The memory of the story I conjured up for the Murphys hits me anew. They were talking about the orchard, and I guess the way they were talking about it made me think of Ellison Park. And I can no longer think of Ellison Park without thinking of the tree.
and my fall. Connor wasn't there that day, of course, but I guess he could have been. I leave the dark living room and head upstairs. Once in bed, I put on my headphones and stream a playlist called Jazz for Newbies. I can't say I totally get jazz, but I've been trying. I wait for the music to take me somewhere, but it never does. I'm too invested in what I'm listening to for my mind to escape. Frankly, only one of the instruments even interests me. I keep waiting to hear what the guitar is going to do. My mom appears at my doorway, forcing my head up off the pillow. I remove my headphones to hear her. "Did you eat already?" she asks.
Yeah.
I already know what she'll ask next, so I quickly cycle through potential answers. Made a sandwich, warmed up frozen pizza, grabbed Chinese. But instead, she says, "Darn." And it almost sounds like maybe she was hoping I hadn't eaten yet.
"That was fun the other day, right?" she says. "Going out for breakfast?"
So much has happened since our breakfast, it already feels like ages ago.
"Yeah, definitely. It was.
I was thinking, how about I bag one of my shifts this week?
When's the last time we did a taco night?"
"I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure those tortillas in the freezer have officially turned by now."
"Oh, you don't have to."
"No, I want to. Maybe we could even start brainstorming those essay questions together."
"The essays. Of course."
Her face waits expectantly.
"Sure," I say. "That would be great."
"Oh, that's exciting," she says, looking victorious.
"I'm excited now. Something to look forward to."
"Yeah." The next day, I see Zoe walking through the cafeteria, joining friends at a table. If I weren't already seated, I would have had to sit down. It's that much of a shock to my system. I haven't seen her in school since the first day. So much has happened in a week. I've interacted with Zoe more than ever. At the wake, at her house, in her car. But all those moments were under the worst of circumstances. This, seeing her right now seated at a table in the school cafeteria, feels right and normal. This is how I'm used to seeing her. This makes sense. Zoe must have felt my stare from across the room because now she's staring back at me. She's staring so intensely that it's almost as if she's daring me to turn away. I can't. I don't want to. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I smile, hoping she'll do the same. She does not. It's like she couldn't do it even if she tried. She lifts her tray and leaves her friends at the table. Her food goes into the trash, and without even a peek in my direction, she walks out of the cafeteria. I'm much better at interpreting books and stories than I am at understanding the decisions made by living, breathing people. But in this case, I can easily apply Mrs. Kiechek's strategies for critical analysis to the real-life behavior I just witnessed. The action of our beautiful and righteous heroine, Zoe Murphy, throwing her food in the garbage is really a metaphor for how she feels about our narrator. In Zoe Murphy's eyes, Evan Hansen is trash. There I go again, overestimating my importance. How quickly I forget myself. Why should I assume this has anything to do with me? Her brother is dead. Maybe she just doesn't have an appetite. I can relate to that. It's just that it's hard to see her look so troubled, especially after the way she began to lighten up at dinner. Her mood shifted when we were talking about Connor, when I was telling her and her parents things they didn't already know, filling in missing pieces. It's like I was able to make them forget the weight of their misery. I brought them some relief. I look across the cafeteria to where Jared's sitting. Leaving my stomach with only my morning medication to feed on, I pack up my lunch and head over to his table. "How do the emails work?" I ask.
"Well, email is short for electronic mail," Jared says. "Ray Tomlinson is credited as inventing the technology in 1971, but we all know it was really the brainchild of Shiva Ayadurai."
"This is serious." I keep my voice as low as possible. Jared leans back conspiratorially.
"It's gonna cost you."
"How much?"
$2,000, Jared says.
$2,000? Are you insane?
$500.
I can give you $20.
Fine,
but you're a dick, Jared says. Meet me at 4 after school. I'll text you the location. Chapter 10. Jared's SUV swerves into the lot of Workout Heaven and slams into a parking spot. He walks past me and through the revolving door of the gym. I follow him inside. Why are we here? Jared flashes a membership card to the muscled bro at the front desk and identifies me as his guest. After filling out some paperwork, I follow Jared through a loud and cavernous room. Everything about Workout Heaven makes me anxious. The bright fluorescent lights, the intense volume, the amount of exposed skin. I still don't know what we're doing at a place like this. Do you work out here? I ask. No, but my parents think I do, Jared says. Trust me, this is a great spot to do homework. Have you ever watched a woman run on a treadmill? That is not... I don't feel... Look, for this kind of job, I can't be on my home network. Think of it as an extra precaution. Being on open Wi-Fi will make it harder for anyone to trace this back to us. He really makes what we're doing sound extra unseemly. I don't know about this. What if someone from school sees us? I would never let that happen. I have a reputation. Besides, no one from our school comes here. Look around, it's all moms and shit. I scan the gym. As loud as it is, it's actually pretty empty. I guess it's just the booming music and high ceilings. Still, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. There's got to be another way. If the Murphys ask me about the emails, I just won't respond. It's not like they're going to hunt me down, right? If you back out now, you still owe me the $20, Jared says, sitting down on a back bench. I picture Zoe's face, the look she had at lunch. Her parents probably have that same look right now, heavy and defeated. Let's just try one email and see what happens, I say. Jared opens a blank file on his laptop and begins typing. Yo, Evan. Sorry it's been a minute. I've been all crazy and shit. You feel me? Why are you making him talk like that?
Like what? Jared says.
You know, like that. Just make him talk normally.
Jared erases everything and starts again.
Dearest Mr. Hansen, I am terribly sorry, alas, that I have failed to maintain contact. Life has been most challenging of late.
Okay, now he sounds like a prince or something. Just have him speak like you and I do. And it has to match my letter exactly. Make it say, Dear Evan Hansen.
Why would you guys refer to each other by your full names?
I don't know, it just has to be that way, okay?
Suit yourself.
Dear Evan Hansen, sorry I've been out of touch. Things have been crazy.
That's perfect, I say.
I want you to know that you've been on my mind this whole time. I rub my nipples every night as I picture your sweet, sweet face.
Why would you write that? I ask.
I'm just trying to tell the truth.
You know, if you're not going to take this seriously, then forget it. These emails have to prove that we were actually friends. They have to be completely realistic. There is nothing unrealistic about the love that one man feels for another. Just write down exactly what I say.
Life without you has been hard. Jared laughs under his breath.
Hard?
Fine, change it to rough.
Kinky.
Here, let me type.
Life without you has been difficult. I really miss talking to you about life and other stuff.
Very specific, Jared says.
Shut up.
I like my parents.
Who says that? Jared asks.
I love my parents, but I hate how much we fight. I should really stop smoking drugs.
Smoking drugs?
Jared shakes his head at me in disappointment.
Just fix it.
This isn't realistic at all.
How do you know? You barely knew Connor.
He gives me another look.
The objective here is to show that I was a good friend, that I was really trying to help him.
Oh my God.
He grabs the laptop back.
I should really take your advice and stop smoking crack.
Crack? I say, that's a little extreme, no? Do people in our school actually smoke crack?
I should really take your advice and stop smoking pot. Maybe then everything might be okay. And I'll try to be nicer. Wish me luck.
That's not bad, actually, I say.
Now sign it at the bottom, sincerely me.
Not even gonna ask, Jared says. Are we done yet?
I can't just show them one email. We need a reply from me back to Connor. There's a loud clang as a tattooed man lets his heavy weights crash to the floor. Even with the thick padding, the impact reverberates under our feet. The man, now pacing around, resembles a rabid MMA fighter primed for battle. This guy could yank someone's head clean off their neck if he felt like it. I can relate. Not the roid rage aggression part or the strength to carry out manual decapitation, but the sensation of being a match strike away from full explosion. I'm actually jealous of this man that he's found an outlet for all his energy. I don't exercise or play sports or participate in any physically demanding hobbies. I did a ton of walking over the summer, but that's about it. I think Dr. Sherman was hoping that writing letters would offer me that same sort of deep release. It hasn't worked out that way. Okay, I say. You ready? Jared is gazing across the room. Look at the bumper on that one. I resist the temptation to look. All right, write down what I say. Dear Connor Murphy, I just got back from the gym.
The gym? Jared says. Seriously?
I just got back from a hike.
That's more believable, Jared says.
I took pictures of the most amazing trees.
No, Jared says.
But that really happened.
Sometimes you truly break my heart.
Dear Connor Murphy, I'm really proud of you for pushing through this tough time. It really seems like you're starting to turn things around. You know I'm here for you whenever you need me. Sincerely, me.
I have to say, the friendship you guys had is just precious, Jared says.
Yeah, it does seem nice, doesn't it?
I can see from Jared's smirk that he wasn't serious.
I just meant that a friendship like this would probably be nice. Having someone to talk to about things, someone who would listen.
P.S. Your sister's hot.
What the hell?
My bad, Jared says, erasing that last line.
Okay, let's do another one. We get into a groove. Dear Evan Hansen, I'm so lucky to call you a friend. Dear Connor Murphy, I'm always on your side, brother. Dear Evan Hansen, I owe you big time. Dear Connor Murphy, don't even mention it. Dear Evan Hansen, you know I've got your back.
All told, we churn out a dozen emails, 6 from Connor and 6 from me.
I feel as exhilarated and out of breath as the bald guy hyperventilating over by the water fountain. We slap on a fake email address for Connor, and then Jared uses his technical wizardry to timestamp the emails to land within the spring. I need to print these out, I say. Jared shuts his laptop.
There's an office supply store in this strip mall.
Perfect, I say, standing up. After that, there's one more favor I need.
Sorry, your $20 is all used up.
Are you sure? I thought you said you wanted to see where the Murphys live. Later that evening, Jared eases up to the end of the Murphy driveway. I lower my window and place the emails into their brick mailbox. Driving away, Jared presents his fist and waits for me to bump it. He wants to celebrate what we just pulled off, but I leave him hanging. As I watch the Murphy's house diminish in my side mirror, I'm in no mood for celebration. Pull over, I say.
Why?
Seriously, pull over. I think I'm gonna puke.
3. My family is gathered in the living room, looking all Norman Rockwell. I wasn't planning on coming home. I left this house for a reason, didn't I? Turns out, I just couldn't stay away. Larry is nursing a scotch. Cynthia and Zoe are reading through the same stack of papers. I never realized Connor was so interested in trees, Cynthia says. Speak of the devil. I can't say I'm surprised about being the topic of conversation. They loved talking behind my back when I was alive, too. I'm pretty sure they're talking about weed, Zoe says. Where? I don't see that, Cynthia says. When they say trees. Oh, Cynthia says. Oh. I lean over my mother's shoulder, see my name on the paper. I also see the name Evan Hansen. You have to read these, Larry. Larry nods, sips his Lafroy. The scotch habit doesn't count, you see. It's part of the job. Hell, the old man's firm gifts him a new bottle every Christmas. I sampled my father's collection. Not my thing. Alcohol was always my least favorite buzz. He seems just, I don't know, different, Cynthia says. They're reading emails from me to Evan, from Evan back